Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
How's it, everybody? Before we start today's episode, we have to issue a really quick correction from the last episode, which was the weird and wacky rules and interactions. We got one thing wrong. It was pointed out by a lot of people. Thank you. It was the it that betrays interaction. So we incorrectly stated that it that betrays will steal other people's commanders, even if they choose to let it go to the graveyard and then to the command zone. That is not actually the case. That used to be the case before they changed the commander dies triggers rule. I don't know if you remember, which was, I think, a little over a year back. It's similar to the banishing light thing. So, yep, we just messed up on that rule. We double-checked it in the wrong places, but we did hear from the rules manager from Wizards of the Coast that it that betrays will no longer be able to steal commanders that go to the command zone. It loses track of it when they are sort of rezoned after they hit the graveyard. So we just want to let everybody know that, so not everybody's out there playing it that betrays incorrectly. It is a card we definitely see in Commander, so wanted to issue that correction. And one other thing I want to say before we get into the full episode here, the new episode, is that Gavin Verhey, our friend, game designer at Wizards of the Coast, has a channel called Good Morning Magic. And literally like the day after we released our weird and wacky rules interaction episode, he released a video about some cool ninjutsu rules hacks that is along the same line. So if you liked the last episode, I just wanted to plug Gavin's channel and that video because there's some cool stuff you can do with ninjutsu, which is obviously going to be in Kamigawa Neon Dynasty here coming up. So stuff you might want to know about. So check that out and then, you know, or check it out after you watch the rest of this episode, which we'll get into right now.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Hey! Man, you're talking back to me!
Take him out, you gotta keep him underrated.
Hey! Man, you're disrespecting me!
Take him out, you gotta keep him underrated.
Wow, not bad. What's up, everybody? You are watching / listening to the Command Zone podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
That song does have relevance to what we're talking about today because we are answering a bunch of very interesting and very thought-provoking listener-submitted questions.
Yeah, we do this a few times a year. I think last year we didn't get a chance to do it because so much product was introduced.
Hooray.
We get a lot of questions through email, comments, Twitter, stuff like that. And we try to answer that stuff directly as much as possible. But as you would imagine, we get thousands of correspondence over the course of the year. So the questions start to pile up. And the interesting ones we sort of keep off to the side and we use for episodes like this. Questions that have an interesting discussion but maybe aren't like a full hour's show worth of talk, you know?
Yeah, it's good enough to, and it's definitely very worthy questions because oftentimes we'll find 10, 20, even 50 people sometimes are asking the same thing. But that single question we could answer in 5 minutes with a discussion. So what we do is we throw them into these episodes and they're some of our most fun episodes to record because we get to cover a lot of stuff and really have some thought-provoking conversations with the audience as well.
Yeah, jump around to a few different topics. So today, some of the questions we're going to be covering are things like, which mechanic do we think is the most underrated?
Ooh.
How many pieces of graveyard hate should you put into your deck when you're entering like an unknown meta? Is targeted land destruction totally taboo?
Ooh.
We've got those questions, much more we're going to be discussing in this episode. But before we get into it, we got to shout out our sponsors, channelfireball.com/command. That is the best place to go to get all your magic products, singles, anything at all. You know you're going to order magic cards anyway. channelfireball.com/command. Or you can use code command at checkout if you forget to use the URL. Channel Fireball Marketplace really is the best place if you're going to like pre-order Kamigawa Neon Dynasty stuff, which is definitely something you want to do right now.
What about those unlands, new shock lands and the basics from that set look incredible from Infinity?
Yeah, all that stuff looks amazing. channelfireball.com/command, the place to go. You're going to get the best prices. You're dealing with licensed professionals, so you're going to get a really good buyer experience.
Yep, and they also stock all sorts of different card games too. So if it's not just Magic, there's lots of other stuff to find there. And when you get those cards, make sure you put them into a protective sleeve, into a top loader, maybe even into a deck box that will survive the test of time. That's right, Ultra Pro makes the products that we trust here on the show and in our own personal lives and collections. We're going to talk a lot about the decks that we play today and some very interesting cards. And those cards, when you get them, you want to protect them, you want to keep them nice and pristine, or play them on the playmat. That makes their presence that much more felt.
Definitely Ultra Pro allows you to just kind of spice up your battlefield the most because they have the sleeves, the deck boxes, the playmats that can all be themed around the same art, the same set, all the Kamigawa stuff. Ultra Pro has it. So yeah, definitely the ones we trust. And the final way to support all of our content is directly if you go to patreon.com/command zone. You know, we started doing something just recently for our patrons that we've never really done before.
Exclusive content.
Yeah. So we have a video right now that only patrons will have access to. We're not putting it on the main channel. It is Jimmy and I doing commentary and reacting to the very first episode of Game Nights. In fact, when the show wasn't even called Game Nights yet.
Yeah, it was called Out of the Box. Yeah. We got the pre-cons for 2016 Commanders, and we were like, you know what? What happens if we just sit down and just throw some cameras up, play it, and we learned a lot from there, but that was the genesis of the show, and we get to react to it. You get to see Josh's unhinged reactions to his early work, I suppose.
A lot of me being like, what was I doing? Why did we do that? So I know a lot of our patrons have really liked watching that video. We're planning this year to produce more exclusive content for patrons. Patrons already get a lot of other perks like access to the Discord, watching Game Nights and Extra Turns early, and in fact we also shout out one lucky patron every single episode. And this episode is dedicated to Rob Mossup. Rob, you rock.
You gotta keep them separated.
So if you want to see that exclusive content, patreon.com/command zone.
Okay.
You gotta keep them underrated.
Yeah, underrated, that's right. You gotta keep them underrated or overrated, but in this case, underrated. All right, we're gonna tackle a lot of great questions today. Normally we're, again, big topics, big things, but this, a lot of very interesting questions have come in because we haven't done this for a while, so I'm excited.
If you have a question for us and you would like your question to be featured on a future episode like this, it's very easy. You just send a question to us through email is probably the best, but you can do it in the comment section on Twitter and things too. But if you really want to stand out, email is the best. And the email to use is contact@commandzone.com. And make sure you use the subject heading question time.
Question time.
Yeah, that's an old joke if you've listened to the show for a while. But that'll just help us find it later on when we're like, oh, we're doing a Q&A episode. We can search through the email and find it a lot easier.
Yeah. And of course, we don't need to feature your name on the episode either or your full question. We usually edit them down for brevity or use pseudonyms. So just let us know if that's the case, but you can use that email. It's a new one, contact@commandzone.com, with that subject header, question time.
And really quickly, we are going to split this episode up into two sections because there's kind of two types of questions we get. Mm-hmm. One category is Commander and Magic related stuff, and the other category is based on content creation, questions about the behind the scenes of Game Nights or something like that. So we're going to start with Commander and Magic stuff, and then we'll move on to the content related stuff. And as Jimmy said, a lot of these questions are not direct quotes from the people. They've been edited for clarity or brevity, and we're not using everybody's real name a lot of the time. In fact, we're only going to do first names here. A lot of people, for whatever reason, they don't want their playgroup to know that they've asked us this specific question sometimes.
There is this guy. It's a friend of mine. You know, you might know someone like them in my playgroup. Yeah, none of those. Okay. All right. Question number one comes from Billy, and Billy asks, what do you think is the most underrated mechanic in Commander, and why?
We're wasting no time. We're starting with the topic heading as the first question here. Most underrated mechanic in Commander. I am going to say haste.
Haste. Wow. So that is one of the most common mechanics in Commander.
Yeah, it's not a mechanic that's rare or that we don't see a lot. This is an evergreen mechanic. And I feel like it's underrated, and I feel like it's often incorrectly utilized.
Oh, I see.
So haste is so strong because surprise is such an important factor in Commander.
Yeah.
Imagine how many times has this happened, Jimmy, where you look around the table and you're like, well, nobody's got any blocker creatures out right now, and there's nothing dangerous to me. So I'm going to make a play based on the fact that I can't see anything that's going to be able to get at me or do anything really, really scary.
Yeah. For me, usually it's like, I want to get out to ahead, or I need to attack or do something to trigger something as well, because my decks are usually based around attacking.
Yeah. And so you're looking, you're like, it feels safe because I can see that nobody's got any creatures out or whatever, and so you'll make a move based on the fact that like it looks like I'm not gonna be able to get cracked back on.
Yeah, I'll develop this turn instead of attacking or whatever it is.
Yeah, and haste really gets around that and can often solve problems for you that wouldn't otherwise be solvable. And I think that one of the big things about haste, and the reason why maybe players undervalue it, is because if you don't use it correctly, then it feels worse than it is. And I think the correct way to use it is to not play out your haste creatures for the most part until the haste is pretty pertinent.
Yeah, and not necessarily just creatures to attack, too. You have activated abilities on creatures that or things that grant them haste.
Yeah, well, and if you've got anger in your graveyard or you've got haste granters like that, a lot of times that's on board and people can see it. But haste on a creature in hand is just something that's very hard for your opponents to predict. And if you sort of save that haste for a rainy day rather than put it out early, I think it's often much more effective. So let's imagine scenarios where like you've had a Sword of Feast and Famine in play and they've removed the creatures and they feel like, okay, well, they're pretty well under control. Because what are the chances they're going to be able to activate their Sword of Feast and Famine on their next turn and really go off? Well, it's pretty low unless you have a haste creature in play, in which case you could maybe get them out. Oh, there's no creatures out right now. I'm going to play my Planeswalker. It looks pretty safe, and I might be able to take them up and really get into a powerful position because there's nothing that's going to be able to get at this Planeswalker. Boom, haste. A lot of times people are like, oh, there's no creatures right now. I'm going to make a play, leave myself a little bit open, but I'm probably not in danger of dying because I can't see anything. Boom, haste comes out of nowhere. So that's why I think haste has often gotten me, because full disclosure, I'm not the player that plays necessarily with a ton of haste. I mean, I've dabbled.
You love anger in the graveyard, though. Yeah, that's for sure.
But they can see it, so they're calculating for that.
Yeah, I will say, too, maybe this is a case to not actually play your Swiftfoot Boots out or your Lightning Greaves out unless you really need to protect something, because those both have haste and either Shroud or Hexproof. You know, and maybe the equip costs are so low.
Maybe we could do a whole episode on haste, because that's a really good point. I think probably a lot of people are misplaying or not properly getting like the most amount of value out of their Swiftfoot Boots and Lightning Greaves. I mean, obviously they're in your decks a lot of times to protect your commander.
But if
they're not going to do that thing right now and that's not important, then I think it a lot of times probably is correct.
It's like a 3-mana haste granter for both of them, right?
Right. And you got to weigh a lot of factors. They cost some mana, and if you can't use that mana in another way right now, it might be better to put them out or something like that. But there are probably points where it's better to hold your Lightning Greaves, play it with a creature, suit it up, do a thing, get in there, you know, maybe knock somebody out or get an important thing out of the way.
And
like I said, if you saved your haste for a rainy day, you'd be able to do that instead of just blowing it early in the game at a point that's not that impactful.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I also think one thing that people should think about is that artifacts that tap for mana also kind of have pseudo haste. A lot of times you play a creature, you can't use it that same turn. People forget that artifacts, newer players usually, can tap the turn to come down. So you can have really explosive turns by sequencing out the mana rocks in your hand so that you can use them to play something else and yada yada.
Yeah, so saving that up and thinking of your play pattern. And I think this is a way that like aggro decks or attacky decks probably should be played a little more often to give them a better chance to win the game. Save those haste creatures, those haste enablers. Make sure your opponents don't know about them.
Yeah.
Get as far as you can with the threat level of what they can see that's slower. And then when you need that final punch,
wait for them to sort of do something that is based on your board state, but not your hand. And then
haste, you didn't see this coming. Boom, I get
you. Yeah, I think to that degree, you could maybe also put trample in with as a very important and underrated mechanic. But it's probably pretty regularly rated now because trample's amazing.
Regularly rated.
Regularly
rated. You gotta keep them regularly rated.
Oh, that does not ring well.
All right, Jimmy, what do you think is the most underrated mechanic in Commander?
This is a slightly more deep cut because I just don't see many cards with this out there. Even though there are plenty of great options, it is Convoke. So Convoke is a mechanic that says your creatures can help cast this spell, and each creature you tap while casting the spell pays for one generic mana or one mana of that creature's color. So this means that you can be tapping creatures on your board for colored mana for Convoke spells. Some of the biggest Convoke spells out there are Hour of Reckoning, which is a board wipe that kills all non-token creatures, so you can use your tokens to tap for it and cast it. There's also March of the Multitudes, which makes a bunch of tokens, and then Court of Calling is the big obvious one. It's That's the one where you can tutor out a creature. I think the reason is because this allows you to cheat out mana, and it doesn't need you to play a Cryptolith Rite in order to do it. You can just do it from the card in your hand. Now, obviously, this only works in decks that have creatures to tap. But honestly, I think if you can tap two, three creatures and not leave yourself in the position where a hasty player can kill you... It really does help lower the mana cost of cards that otherwise are a little bit high in the CMC. Like, Hour of Reckoning, I think, is an 8 mana value card. But in a token deck, or even a deck with a couple of creatures in it, you're casting it for 6, 5, and if you can benefit off that side, that's great. So I like Convoke a lot. It's a way to cheat out mana costs. I hope they do more of it in the future. I like the idea of rewarding you for building up a board state that is a little more fragile, because you can then use it in different ways. Hooray.
Yeah, I think Convoke, I mean, anything that turns all of your creatures basically into mana creators, we know is powerful, like Cryptolith Rite and things like that. And this is another way to do that. I mean, Court of Calling, such a powerful card.
Instant speed, too, so you can Convoke at end step. You don't even need to tap on your main phase to do it.
It's often a great way to protect your board state when you have a large board state, because having a large board state is when it's good, because you have a lot of creatures that are going to be able to tap for mana. And that's also when you're the most vulnerable, because you have a large board state, so somebody's trying to probably blow it up. Mm-hmm. And definitely, I have gone to blow up people's board state where they go, Court of Calling, Avacyn, and you're like, crap.
Yeah,
it just saved everything. Kinda, and I'm like, now probably dead.
Yeah, that the surprise factor again is a big part of it, and there are a few Convoke spells that are instant speed, so that's why I like it a lot. And then the OG from back when we played Standard for about 2 seconds was Stoke the Flames, another great card with Convoke on it.
Oh, the good old Standard days.
Yeah, one of Josh and I played for 1.5 tournaments, and we're like, this sucks.
As soon as rotation hit us one time, we were like, well, we're not doing that again.
Yeah,
that was the worst.
That was a nice
My
experiment.
My whole deck just went away.
Yeah.
Overnight.
But it's what got us into Magic originally, was that Khan's era, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was really limited, though. I don't want to give credit to Standard.
Yeah.
We just played Standard because we had all the cards.
We had all the cards, and I still had to buy some extras, and then, again, rotation, and I was like, why did I do that?
Oh, I still have all 4 Teemer Sabertooths, which are doing nothing for me. Sorry, I meant to say Savage Knuckleblade.
Oh, yeah.
Big Nux. Yeah, I got screwed up because Teemer Sabertooth has the word Teemer in it, and Big Nux is Teemer.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you get it. Question number 2. I know that land destruction is frowned upon in casual circles, but I lost to a Glacial Chasm the other day because I just had no way to deal with it.
Are you playing him? Or her? Sorry.
I'm not sure what I should do. If I put Strip Mine or the like in all of my decks, are people going to hate me? And this is from Daisy.
The answer is no, Daisy. Strip Mine is an incredible card. So is Wasteland. There's a reason also that they've been climbing in price. And mass land destruction is frowned upon.
Yeah, I think that's gotten a little bit confused in the community. Mass land destruction being Armageddon and things that destroy all lands or destroy a lot of lands. Mm-hmm. I would put like Wildfire and things in there that every player, you know, has to sacrifice for a lot of lands as things that are frowned upon by most casual Commander players. But in general, single target land destruction, in my experience, has not been frowned upon. And if people are frowning upon it, is that a thing? I think they're probably misconstruing. Like, definitely you should have the ability in your deck to answer a Cabal Coffers or answer
Gaia's Cradle.
Well, Gaia's Cradle for sure. Or answer a land that somebody has put, you know, some amount of enchantments on. Or also
or Blast Zone, any of those kinds of cards. Yeah.
Also, I think you want Strip Mine and Wasteland in all of your decks now. If you can, obviously they're not cheap cards, so some kind of land destruction in your decks if possible, because of Imprisoned in the Moon and Song of the Dryads.
If
they cast that onto your commander, it can just be very hard for some decks to figure out a way to get their commander back. And one of the ways you can do it, it's not the, you know, it sucks, but is
strip one yourself.
I've definitely done it, right? You play strip mine, you're Imprisoned in the Moon commander, it goes to the command zone. It's not the best, but at least like I'm back in the game, because so often now if my commander's not out, the deck just doesn't do anything, because that's just how commander is more often played than in the old days.
Yeah, and there's lots of other, there's like Ghost Quarter, there's a lot of options out there as well for ones that don't fully punish the person. They're allowed to get a land, or there's a newer one that you both get to get a land when you sacrifice it, so you're never down on the land. So there are other ways to do it. Strip Mine and Wasteland are the most expensive, because you can play it that same turn, tap it, and get rid of it. Now, things that players do frown upon, Daisy, is if you have a Crucible of the Worlds or Ramming Up Excavator in your deck, and then you're playing these lands out of your graveyard every turn, sometimes multiple times, and getting rid of multiple lands. Or if you're singularly targeting one person with repeated land destruction, or cards like Plow Under, that is what's frowned upon, because you are stripping away the ability for people to play the game, and sometimes in a way that feels way too targeted.
Yeah. I would say those are things you can choose to do too. Like, you don't have to play your strip mine with your Ramanac excavator.
Please
don't. You can if you want to. I've done it for sure. If somebody's done something else that I think is equally
and they're
as
out of
bad.
Control, yeah,
it's like, oh, whatever. Sorry, I'm going to strip mine three of your lands.
If a glacial chasm is winning the game for that player, the other players at the table should not have any issues with you getting rid of it. Because at the end of the day, you are playing your land for the turn and using it to get rid of that card. So you're actually down the card too.
Yeah, it's definitely not an advantageous play to play a strip mine and strip mine somebody's land. As far as, like, that player's down a card, you're down a card, the other two players are up a card. So I don't think there's anything that should be frowned upon by the community. That's just, like, a straight-up fair play. It's when you go to Armageddon and then, you know, with your suspended creatures on the stack or something like that, that people start to get a little bit salty. Generally, that does win the game, though. I don't tend to mind land destruction as much for that reason, but I get why people don't like it, because they're like, you took away my ability to cast stuff and play the game. One land is not your ability to cast stuff and play the game. It's multiple lands that really starts to be like, well, I can't do anything now.
Yeah, and lands, again, are considered the most powerful part of Magic by many players because they are generally very hard to interact with. You'll see the words non-land permanent on a lot of cards these days because they don't want people to just be taking out lands willy-nilly.
Yeah, I think we should take off the stigma of getting rid of lands and making them sacrosanct a little bit more than we do, actually, if anything. Mm. I think we're a little bit too far on the side of, you know, land destruction is frowned upon. I think we should move it back towards... We should normalize it a little bit, as
I mean,
say.
I would say if you're playing against someone that placed five mana rocks and then they have three lands out, it's definitely okay to get rid of one of their lands because they're showing that they can expand their mana in other ways. So.
All right. Oh, and there's just so many lands now that are just like, you know, somebody puts out Field of the Dead or whatever.
Oh,
like,
my gosh.
You've got to be able to get rid of those lands. Yeah. They just do a lot these days. So.
Yeah, it's true. They do a lot.
All right. Let's move on to question number three.
All right. How many graveyard hate should you put in your deck while preparing for an unknown meta? Should you focus on versatile ones or effective pieces just so you don't get caught unprepared? Thank you, Daniel, for a very good question there.
Jimmy, how many pieces of graveyard hate would you say the average deck you built includes? And this is for our meta, obviously.
I would say 3 to 4. And if it's a black deck, almost always one of them is Bajuka Bog because it doesn't take up actual card slot. Similarly, like, right, single target removal, you could say strip mine is kind of like single target removal. Yep.
Scavenger Grounds is another one.
Scavenger Grounds, yeah.
I put that in almost every deck because that card is just really good.
And now we have Douthi Voidwalker that also is kind of like an auto include in a lot of black decks.
Yeah.
And then I would say, like, Rest in Peace, even though I barely play any decks with white, and that Rest in Peace is just an incredible card that should go in a lot of decks.
Leyline of the Void. I tend to stray away from the ones that just turn off the whole graveyard strategies.
Right.
Bajuka Bog, Scavenger Grounds, they are cards that, like, you use it once and it has a big effect, but it doesn't stop their strategy from that point forward. Mm-hmm. Whereas Rest in Peace is just like, boom, kind of like Blood Moon. Hey, sorry, graveyard decks, you can't do anything until you get rid of this thing.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, I tend to not use that kind of stuff as much, although I do play Douthi Voidwalker. It's just too good.
Pretty good.
I would say for an unknown meta, there's a lot of graveyard hate stuff that's kind of like neutral if you just, that has cycling on it, kind of like Relic of Progenitus.
Yeah.
Does the thing where, you know, it hoses graveyards but it draws you a card
and it does it one time.
Yeah,
so you basically can just wait to use it at the most opportune time, but it doesn't completely destroy someone's deck. They'll just go back, restart their engine, blah blah.
There are the Lantern, Soul Guide Lantern of the Lost. Both have a draw card aspect. They're cheap. They don't do what Rest in Peace does, but I think that's enough when going into an unknown meta that, like, hey, if they're not playing graveyard stuff, you just pay one, pay a second one, draw a card, and it doesn't have a large effect, but two mana draw a card is gonna just cycle through your deck. It's not like you played Tormach Crypt or something, does literal nothing and cost you the card.
What I do like are cards like Ashiok Dream Render, because this is multiple uses of land, of graveyard hate. But I think in an unknown meta, you would be fine with just a few pieces. And then if you have tutors in your deck, then you know that that's a redundant piece that you can go find that card should it be really necessary.
Yep. All right. That's a good question, though. I like it.
Thank you, Daniel.
All right. So question number four. Occasionally, I'll see players playing for second place, meaning that in the late game and convinced they cannot win, they will target players other than the one in the commanding lead. I think this is poor sportsmanship. What are your thoughts? From Chris.
You know, they do say that if you come second in a race, you're the first loser, right? No, that all
it doesn't matter if you win by an inch or a mile.
Winning's winning. Thanks, Dom. I will say that I think Commander is not even about playing for second place or first place in general. I like playing Commander for fun. So I think if someone's trying to gun for second place and they're trying to knock out people as someone is already surging ahead, to me it feels like, well, you kind of missed the challenge there. It would have been fun to try and get rid of the archenemy, right? Instead of just letting them run away with it. But I don't personally, I feel like I don't really have too many issues one way or the other with someone that would do this in the game with me.
I look at Commander a lot of like what makes you quote unquote good at Commander or maybe fun to me about Commander as like predictive social modeling.
Mm-hmm.
And so if a person does that, that is a thing I should have been able to read about them and maybe take advantage of. So,
but now you know for the future games too.
Yeah. And so maybe they're the person I particularly want to be in second place, and putting them into that position is actually a strategic advantage that I'm, you know, using on purpose as a thing. I don't think it's poor sportsmanship at all, because the way a person reacts genuinely in the moment just kind of is how multiplayer social dynamics should work, right?
Yeah, and we should be abiding by what players want to do, unless it's just so egregious and so offensive that it makes people not want to play with them. And I think this is far from that.
Yeah, as long as they're using their cards and fair effects within the game, whatever they decide they want to accomplish within the game, like it's not really that much different than complaining if a person is like, well, they built a story deck and they're trying to like tell a certain story. They're not even trying to win. Well, that's how they're playing the game. And if you're trying to win, your goals are not aligned, but that doesn't mean that you can't use each other to help that you each advance whatever your goals are. I mean, yeah, we're famous for always saying like, however you enjoy the game, that's the way you should play it. And I don't think it's poor sportsmanship to not try to win. Because there's a lot of ways that people go about not trying to win or not trying super hard to win.
Yeah. If they win, cool, but they're not specifically gunning for it.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of players who are like, oh, I'm trying to build this weird combination of cards that I built this deck to do. And I, you know, if I win, that's cool. But I've seen a lot of players like, I don't care. I did my thing. Yeah. I'm happy. And they're not poor sports. So I don't think that's inherently that different than somebody who's like, well, whatever, I can't win this game, but I'm going to make sure I get second.
Yeah, I would also say like, you'll know after the game whether or not that decision was one that really upset a lot of people. And if it is one that you find is consistently happening, they're only right. If it gets bad, then that's the kind of thing where you go, okay, we've seen a few case studies of this now. We know that this leaves players around the table feeling X, Y, and Z. So let's talk about it. And that is, again, part of that whole rule zero / post-game discussion that people are starting to talk about now for Commander, which is when you're done, maybe that's a time to reflect and think about the things that you may have felt. And if this is one of those things and it's getting out of control, then you can have a conversation for it. But I think both Josh and I are on the same page here.
I think there are like sketchy, borderline scummy things you can do within the game too.
Well, like conceding at instant speed.
I was just going to say that. That's exactly the point I was going to make. I think that, you know, we have a general rule in our playgroup that you can only concede at sorcery speed. Mm-hmm. And this is just so that if someone's attacking you and they have a bunch of lifelink or something and you're mad because they're killing you, you don't get to just spite concede. You don't get the lifelink, ha ha ha. Because that's just not using game mechanics.
Yeah, you're like cheating the system to spite someone else.
So that kind of stuff definitely rubs me the wrong way if people try and pull that. But I don't think anything you're doing that's legally allowed to be done with the cards that you've brought into the game is generally unsportsmanlike. This did make me think of a related discussion we had around the office, Jimmy.
Uh-huh.
So this is not a listener question, but it was related enough and I thought interesting to bring up. We played a game the other day and someone was getting attacked for lethal in that game. And they had some blockers up and, you know, decided to block in a way that hurt the attacking player the most, like killed a couple of their creatures, but they were still going to die no matter how they blocked.
Right.
And there was a discussion in that game about, well, you know, you're going to die. Why are you killing that player's creatures? You're king making in a way. You could just let it all through since you're going to die anyway so that they don't take a disadvantage from attacking you.
I see. Right. Yeah. Interesting. Well, where do you land on this?
Oh, I'm definitely like, if you're coming after me, and especially if I'm in a playgroup that I play with a lot, like I want to establish that, like, listen, whatever I can do with my cards,
I will.
To harm you, I will. Because I need you to calculate into every future game from here on out. Yes, I could take Josh out, but in so doing, I will injure myself to the point where I probably won't win this game. So I need to wait for a better moment. Yeah. And that gives Josh, me as the player, maybe a little bit of leeway in situations. Maybe they have to leave me alone or be wary. I don't know what punches he can throw as he's going down that might be able to, like, hurt me a lot to the point where I can't win this game anymore. And I like establishing that. I think there's a lot of value in, you know, you get a lot of game value in that over the course of, you know, many, many games.
Yeah, I like doing whatever you can to the player that's attacking you just because it feels right. It's a very like blunt way of putting it. But like, hey, if you're going to take me out, then I'm going to do whatever I can to stop you. Also, you should be at making them wonder, do they have something? Can they stop me from killing them? And those kinds of decisions sometimes will make someone not attack you at all. So I think just like lying back or being like, I'm going to take care of other things around the table, or I'm not going to do anything at all, doesn't actually put you in an advantageous position for that game or the future, because you don't want people to think that you've got no bite either.
Yeah, I like that. Exactly that statement. I mean, imagine a player, a mythical player, who if they're attacks for lethal or anything, they just concede and they let you not lose anything in the exchange even when they can.
Yeah.
You always take that player out when you have the chance, right? Because what is the downside to you? There's nothing. Whereas the player who's more like you and I, that's like, hey, listen, if I have got Path to Exile on my way out, I'm going to take out your best creature, I'm going to block, I'm going to trade. You have to calculate that into, and that means that sometimes you don't make a move that you might otherwise make.
Yeah, and sometimes other players can be indebted to you doing this on the way out and actually save your life, because they're like, actually, I've been holding on to a path myself. I know that they're actually enemy. I will get rid of his big creature so that you don't die.
Yeah, or use my maze to save you.
And then
I'll make a deal with you or whatever. But if you didn't block and do everything else, then they can't even save you, right?
Yeah, I think Commander is about the group up until the point where you're getting swung out for lethal, and then it's about you.
All right, this next question, we get a lot of people asking some variation of. I mean, hundreds of people. So it's going to be from Lewis, but whoever you are that's asked this question, again, a lot of you, this could be you.
Thank you.
Which sets would you recommend to new Commander players looking to buy a box and boost their Commander collection with good playable cards?
Unopened Alpha. So I can see it happen.
If you do that, will you please stream it?
Yeah, please stream
it. You have to be like... There's like three in existence,
yeah,
maybe.
I don't even think there's that many yet. I think this is actually a really easy question, and I'm going to be able to update it at the end of this year, hopefully. But I think the Commander Legends set has to just be one of the easiest slam dunk. I want to get into Commander. I want an assortment of cards that work for multiplayer, that work for group settings, and you can just buy them. You can find commanders in there. They're everywhere. There's old ones. There's the etched foils and stuff, too. Lots of options there, and some very powerful cards as well. And a banned card, but we don't talk about that one.
Hull Breacher. Yeah, that's a really good one. I think obviously Commander Legends is designs for Commander, so it's likely to have the most goodies. And we know there are like 71 legendary creatures in that thing.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You're
yeah.
likely to get a lot of options for decks to build.
Cool partner pairings and stuff too.
I would say just anything within the last couple of years. I mean, depending on what your budget range is, generally whatever is the most recent set is the cheapest to get if your heart is set on like, I'm going to buy booster packs and crack booster packs in order to build my collection. Because, you know, what Jimmy and I have talked about a lot recently on the show is just how powerful new cards are in the format.
Yeah.
And so anything from the last couple of years is going to be, you know, all those cards are strong enough to play in Commander because they've been designing stuff for our format now where they didn't used to. So if you bought something from like Khan's Block or something like that, like
very few of those cards actually are going to be, now we're not going to use the word playable, but ideal. How about that?
Yeah, you'll just have less cards that are sort of Commander caliber for, you know, the greater world of Commander out there. And so I think like newer sets are probably the most sort of jam-packed, especially within the last 2 years because they did the Year of Commander. And then 2021 felt like even more Year of Commander.
Yeah.
So there's just a lot of stuff there. And then I think it's down to just preference. Like, do you like vampires? Do you like werewolves?
Oh, yeah.
Which set is it that kind of speaks to you? Because you're going to get a lot of legendary creatures. That's just how they build sets now. And you're going to get a lot of Commander playable cards because they're seeding more of that stuff in than they used to.
And Commander's Legend Baldur's Gate is coming out this year. That
I might wait for that.
Yeah, yeah. Who knows?
People don't wait.
Well, I would also say Strixhaven, of all the sets, I think are great because they had a very specific focus on the enemy color pairs. And so there are all of them. And the ally color pairs too, I think, right? No, just the enemy.
Just the enemy.
Yeah. So that's a great place to start. Two colors is a very good entry point for Commander.
I like that. I would say Strixhaven. Anything from the last couple of years, but Strixhaven or Commander Legends. I like Strixhaven a lot.
And I'm back to school.
All right. This is a related question, this next one. I'll let you read it, but it's very similar. We get asked this a lot too.
All right. I have a few pre-cons, but a relatively small collection. Should I buy sealed or singles? From Caleb.
So these two questions are obviously related because I think there is this feeling among newer players of like, my collection is small. I just don't have a lot of cards.
Yeah.
And what is the best way to go about sort of having more cards in my collection? You see your friend, you know, like ours is Craig has a lot of cards. A lot of cards. Like, a lot of cards.
He's been playing for 20 plus years. So,
and so when we got into Commander, I remember looking at the, just the amount of stuff that Craig had and just thinking like, he has so many more cards than I have. I need to get more cards because I want to be able to build more decks and stuff. And Craig has a million, you know, he had 40 decks at that point, and I had two. so I know why new players like feel the desire to sort of grow their collection. It's not like they want any specific deck so much as they just want options. Because you and I can sit at home, Jimmy, and like
pour over many, many cards.
Yeah, if we want to build a deck,
we'll figure it out.
Yeah. Now, there'll probably be cards we want to order to sort of optimize it and make it better. But in general, like, I can make a functional deck of almost anything just because my collection is fairly large now.
Yeah. And if you should ask yourself, right, are you looking to have a collection that you can just open up, pick from, and build a deck out of scratch?
It's overrated, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say that, too. Are you looking to more specifically build into your favorite colors? Are you just, you care about, like Josh said earlier, you just love werewolves or vampires? And ask yourself that, because that will also change the answer that we'll give you, I think.
Yeah, it's totally overrated to have a big collection that you can just build stuff from, because you will always have cards that you wish you need for this deck that you just don't own. And I don't care how long you've been in Magic, it still happens to Craig, for instance. So I would
say the cards pile up too. Yeah. You know, you're thinking, oh, I'm going to get all these cards. It's so cool. I have access to all these things. And then you're looking at piles of cards to the left and the right. You're losing track of things. It's hard to keep track of all of them.
Okay, let me ask you a question. I know the answer, but just for the audience.
Yeah.
Have you ever ordered a card that you 100% know you own, but you're ordering it because you don't want to have to find it?
It's not, it's not just that I don't want to have to find it. I actually just don't know where it is.
Right.
Because I'm like, is it in one of those decks? If it is in the deck, then I do need another one for this new deck. If it's not one of those decks, which of these 70 boxes I'm looking at is it going to be in? I'm just going to pay a quarter and get another one.
Yes. There was a card. I was building a deck the other night. There's a card from like Battle for Zendikar. It's like a common.
Oh, yeah. There's no.
And I was like, I know where my Battle for Zendikar stuff is. It's in the back of my closet over there. And I'll have to take down like 9 boxes, find the box with it, search through it, find it, then put all that back. And I was like, I'm just going to pay 25 cents for the card.
Yeah.
So big collection overrated. Caleb, this is...
Time is valuable.
Yeah.
If you're going to take 30 minutes to find a card, maybe that's worth more than a quarter.
So, Caleb, this is a long way of telling you, buy singles, not sealed product, if you want to build your collection. Trust me, your collection will still build over time.
Yeah. If you want the joy of cracking packs and all that stuff...
Playing limited,
you can buy regular booster packs, or the collector's boosters seem like a really fun cracking experience for Modern Horizons 2, for Commander Legends, and for obviously a lot of the feature sets. But that's if you just want to have flashy cool cards, and then maybe you have the goal of trading it. Maybe you have the goal of going to your store and selling it back to the store and getting redemption. In which case, you can buy some sealed product, but otherwise, Josh and I, it's obvious.
Buy singles. Channelfireball.com/command. Okay.
You got to keep them separated. The singles.
Yeah,
from the sealed product.
Regular rated. All right. Question number 6.
I like this one.
If you could have a superhero as your commander, who would it be? This is from Zach.
I would have it be Josh Lee Kwai, hero of the command zone. I was thinking about all of the Marvel and the DC superheroes, and this one's pretty obvious to me. I want it to be The Flash.
Oh, nice.
It's super fast. It's red. It's hasty. I love the fact that Flash can go so fast. I believe he can turn back time with his speed.
So he should be like red blue then.
Yeah. Because he's definitely manipulating time itself by moving so quickly. I think that would be really cool to have kind of like a Norn the Wary-esque card with the Flash, because he's always bouncing in and out. It's really hard to target. It's a different kind of haste.
Would he be like extra turns or extra combats or something? It almost has to be, right?
I feel like he would allow you to take another main phase or take another step, but not necessarily give you a whole extra turn, because I think that's
another combat step maybe. That's pretty good, because he can definitely hit you twice while other people he's faster than double strike.
He is flash strike.
I was thinking about it too, and I think I would go with Professor X.
I think you may have talked about this before.
Really?
Like. Yeah, because it's just such a cool card.
Yeah, and I just want to read other people's minds. I don't know. I don't want telepathy, because that is just a confusing card, and every time it's on the table, like, it's too much information and it slows down games.
How would Professor X work from a gameplay standpoint?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe you can look at other players' hands in some way. Or he also does that thing where he just pauses everybody.
Meow.
Is that a real thing from the comics, or is that just a movie thing?
It could just be a movie thing, and then they kept doing it because of that challenge that went viral.
It seems way too powerful. Like, hey, I can just stop time for everybody. That feels broken, but also I think in a commander game it'd probably be quite good. And he's clearly like like a blue card and I'm a blue player. So.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely more in the realm because Obeka does that, right? Just ends the turn or whatever.
So I
feel like it's Professor X would need to do something that's a little more proactive, but from a seated position because he doesn't go out and like fist fight people.
Professor O. Becca.
Becca.
That is actually...
Chronologist.
I already built that deck. It's pretty cool. So, yeah. All right. We've got a few more Magic-related questions left. We're not done yet. And then we'll move on to the stuff about our content creation and that aspect of our channel. But first, we got to take a quick break. Hear a message from our sponsors.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
All right, we are back answering some of the top, coolest, hardest-hitting questions we've ever answered on this channel. Whenever. And this next one is going to knock us on our butts, Josh.
It is, because I had to go count.
How many commander decks do each of you own? Dun, 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 asks Sean. Thank you, Sean.
I currently have 28.
Whoa!
And there are like three or four that I've opened and taken a few cards out of.
Oh, so they're kind of non-functional then.
And by the way, I'm an idiot. I don't know what cards I've taken out of those because I was going through last night and I was like, I remember opening this box and putting it in this position to remind myself that, hey, don't play this. You've taken some cards out.
Yeah, yeah.
And nowhere did I write down like what those cards are. So I'm just looking at the deck going like, that was 6 months ago. I don't remember what I took out of this thing.
I do the same thing where I'm like, I'm so smart. I'm going to take a picture of all those cards. I take a picture and then literally months later, like you said, you're like, where is the picture? And then you look at the picture and you go, I can't even tell if some of these are foil or if that one's a...
What does this picture tell me? Is it telling me what's missing?
Yeah. Like,
okay, so how many decks do you have?
I actually looked, and because so many of my decks are in disarray, I have 7.
That's it?
Yeah, but I have about 16 that are half built. Or they're from game nights, and I was like, I like the colors, so I'll make a new deck out of this. I'm going to take these cards out, but these are just synergy pieces. Yeah, so I have like 7 fully functional, I can take them with me to events decks, and then I have, I would say, like 2 or 3 that are functional and fully to get there, but they are just old and they don't have ramp in them, they don't have color fixing, they were just like experiments,
they haven't been updated since, you know, 2016 or something.
So I guess the how many decks I own, probably closer to 15, and some of them are disarray, and how many decks I actually are proud to play and are functional is like 7 to 8.
Wow, I have 28 I could play, and I gotta say about 3 to 5 of them are like I don't actually ever really play, because one of them is like Mizzix.
Oh,
I have a Derevi Stacks deck.
Yeah, my Mizzix decks is just sitting. I need to take that.
I have a Teferi Chainveil deck. I think I've played it twice in the last year. So like real decks that I play, there's probably like 20 in the actual rotation?
A better question might be, how many decks have we built?
Oh, yeah.
And at this point, it's probably close to 100.
Well, that's interesting. And this isn't a question that anybody asked. And this is a little bit about our content creation. So
yeah,
we'll be quick here. But people often ask us, like, what happens to the decks we build in game nights?
Oh, right.
Because,
yeah,
it, you know, if just by game nights, you have built 9 or 10 decks per year for the last five years.
Yeah.
So it should be 50 decks. But what happens is we got to take those apart most of the time to use the parts for other decks for game nights. So we don't tend to keep them around. I think there's probably, like, of all the decks, you know, we've played 50 episodes now. Some of them are pre-cons, obviously. I think there's like 3 to 5 of those decks I still own. And what I ended up doing was taking those apart and then reordering the pieces for a deck so that...
Yeah, the cards can go back to the office collective pool, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So how many of the decks from game nights would you say that you've kept around?
About 3.
Yeah.
And one of them is in that disarray pile because I was like, I just like the colors. I don't want to actually build this commander, though.
Yeah, so we build a lot of decks for game nights and extra turns, but they don't stick around forever.
Yeah.
Like our personal collection.
I will say my brain hurts thinking about my decks and how many of them need to get upgraded. And when I do so, it's like it's a serious retooling. It's not just going in and putting new tires in the car. It's like new engine, new upholstery, a lot of new things.
Yep. It's a time commitment for sure.
Okay.
All right, there's a follow-up question from another audience member that's similar or at least on the same subject. Anthony asks, do you have a method of how you like to build / rotate the decks?
Mm.
For instance, do you try to avoid similar strategies or avoid color clashing? And this has to do with the decks in our own collection.
Yeah, this is a great question. I 100% am very conscious about color clashing.
Yeah.
But if a new commander comes along that just is great, it kind of overrides everything.
So you... What does that mean? Like, you're like, oh, I already have a Boros deck, so I'm not going to build another red-white deck?
Yeah, so I only have 1 5-color deck because, one, the mana base and all that stuff, it's a headache to think and figure out, and I just don't enjoy playing 5-color that much. So I'm like, okay, I'll just have 1 5-color deck. I'll rotate around. But I have 3 mono-red decks. One of them's in disarray because...
But of course, you're the mono-red guy.
Yeah, and I love Neheb, but it's a very different play style than, like, a Kiki-Chiki deck. Mm. So, obviously, those are 2 different decks.
Obviously.
If there is a color clash, like, I'm not going to build a bunch of Simic decks, for instance. That sounds like the worst. That actually sounds like the most boring thing in the world to me.
I don't care at all about current, and then I have no idea. When I counted the decks, I didn't, like, map it out. I don't know how many of what I've got. I know I've got a lot of 5 and 4 color decks, but I don't know exactly how many. I don't care at all. I'm just like, is this a cool strategy that I think will be fun? And I don't even think too much about whether I have another deck that's that strategy, although I tend to be like, I already have a token deck.
So, and is this different enough that I want to actually do it?
I start putting together a list of cards, sometimes I'll be like, this feels familiar. All of these cards exist in my other deck that's like that. And then that will often, like, disincentivize me from actually building the new deck. Or I'll take the old deck and just take those pieces if there's enough and make the new deck. But in general, I don't think about color combination at all.
There have been a couple of times, too, where you've built the deck and you look at it and go, nope, I don't want to play this. This looks too unfun, too mean, too much of a drag or whatever it is, right?
Happens a lot for game nights and stuff for sure, where I'm like, because I think I am drawn towards powerful stuff and sometimes mean stuff. So I'll be like, this sounds cool. And then I'll put it together and I'll be like, this is all edict effects. This is nasty. Yeah. No one will like this.
Nothing's cool about this. This is actually painful.
Which is nice. It forces me a lot of times to be like, oh, I'm going to build this attacky deck because it's not something I'm necessarily drawn to, but I'm going to do that because I think it'll be more fun. And it's caused me to find that I like things that I didn't maybe think I would like. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think my advice to you out there, if you're thinking a lot about, do I want to avoid this or whatever, I would just build to your taste at first. I know people that have 5 decks that are all very similarly themed, and they love it, and they don't want to play other stuff. So you just do what's to your taste.
There's no rules, right? Nobody, if anybody shames you for, like, why do you build this, you know, kind of deck all the time.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, I like it. I'm not asking you to eat what I eat at the restaurant every time. I'm just going to order what I like, all right?
Wow, every time you order the same thing?
I don't, but...
I am that kind of person. I'm a creature of habit.
Yeah.
But not with my decks as much.
But there's nothing wrong with it. There's not... Like, I am a variety person, so I'll often order something on the menu that I haven't just because I want to try something new.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean I get to look down my nose. There's no right way, right? You could look down your nose at me and be like, you order something different every time. And I can look down my nose at you and be like, you order the same thing every time. It's stupid. Neither of us is right.
But one of us is objectively better. No, I'm just kidding. All right, next question. Why do you guys play Commander? What do you love about it? Did you start out playing it, or did you/do you ever play other formats? A great question from Max.
So this is two questions. Let's do the...
It's actually three.
It's three.
Or four, I guess.
Why do we play Commander and why do we love it is kind of one question. And the other is format. So let's split this up. Why do I play Commander and why do I love it? I love the multiplayer part of Commander.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I like the social aspect of it. The fact that it feels more like hanging out with friends and the game itself is just kind of a backdrop, an excuse to that. I love the game, love the strategy of the game and everything. But in general, very casual when we play, lots of laughs, nothing's taken too seriously. I like that about Commander. And I do also like social dynamics and playing with, you know, that kind of werewolf-y style, you know, playing off of each other, making deals, finding loopholes. I find that fun as a piece of a game.
Yeah, I think any table that we're at, you're going to hear like at least one belly laugh per game, and that I think is a big reason both of us like to play Commander. I got into Commander the same year I got really into playing board games.
Mm.
And so I think that tied along really well because I love the social aspect. I love being able to hang out with people I really enjoyed being in the company with and learning to play new things, experimenting with new things. And Magic just happened to be the one board game that when you opened it, you were like, it was like that, you know, that magical cave. And when you walked into the cave, you're like, this place is way bigger than the box it came in. And so that was sort of a big part of our love for it originally. And the fact that we started talking about it so much, I think almost kind of convinced my brain to like it more, if that makes sense. It's not like it's in a bad way. It's that it sort of accelerated our love of the format because we were turning into podcasters and talkers about it.
It really is that well that you just can never find the bottom of. And that's mostly about Magic, the game of Magic, and how deep and complex it is. So I think if we had chosen another game to do a show about, we might have petered out after, you know, a few months, just because most games do just cannot
keep up.
They just can't, you know, as you go deeper and deeper and talk, like you can't talk an hour a week about most sport, like Monopoly or something.
I could talk 1 hour about Monopoly.
Oh, definitely you could talk an hour about Monopoly. There's people that have like all the,
I
like,
don't want to talk an hour.
Well, that's just because you don't love it. But what I mean is like,
I think
the people who are really into Monopoly probably couldn't do 450 episodes an hour a week.
Right.
Talking, like they would retread the same ground a lot just because. And listen, I know there's some going to be people out there who love Monopoly, and I know there's like a Monopoly competitive scene or whatever, but it's just not on the same, it's not in the same ballpark or league as Magic as far as complexity.
Yeah, and not to mention the online and the gathering scene and the convention scene started growing and growing when we were playing, so that definitely helped create more of a love for it, that we knew so many other people out there. I reconnected with so many people because of the game as well. And I think one thing that I think a lot of people don't talk about is that the game itself, in those social interactions, in the small games you play, the mini games in each game and all of that, that's really complex stuff, and it teaches you a lot about how to operate in life too, that has I think benefited our content creation and all that stuff.
Yeah, I like that. All right, the second part of the question is, did you start out playing it, or did you, or do you ever play other formats?
So Josh and I both got into Limited at the same time. Big shout out to Limited Resources. Because of them, we were like, let's do a podcast about Magic. So I think we love Limited for similar reasons. It gives you an endless well. Every time you draft, it's different. It's a complex, really fun activity to draft cards and build decks that are themed sometimes around the most powerful thing you find or around the theme of a set that's fun to play with. And then that competition part also is a lot of fun.
Yeah. Limited, I picked up and played before Commander when I got back into Magic, and still love Limited. It's such a great way. I think it's the most difficult or most skill-testing way to play Magic.
For sure.
And it also embodies all the great things that make Magic an awesome game. You get to crack packs.
Yep.
You card evaluate on the fly. You deck build. And then you have to be a very good player of the game. You have to sequence correctly. And because the card pools are generally small, you can do things like play around effects or guess really at what your opponent's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I love Limited to this day. We still draft, you know, as often as we can, obviously harder during the pandemic. But whenever I play Arena, that's all I play. I don't play Standard
or Historic.
Yeah, exactly. It's all Limited. I just think Limited is great. So yeah, that's the other form of play we played. We did allude to the fact that we dabbled in Standard a little bit at one point. I played a few games of Modern here and there.
And both of us started playing on like playgrounds, basically. I played in third grade on the cement outside of the school. I cast a lightning bolt, many lightning bolts on that pavement, and that really kicked off my love of the game.
It's still seared and scarred, the pavement there.
It better
you can find
be.
The spot.
Yeah, I'm going to go back and sign it someday.
If you're interested in Limited, whether you love it or maybe you haven't even tried it, Limited Resources, which Jimmy talked about, Marshall and LSV do an amazing show there. are one of the reasons our podcast exists. And Lords of Limited is another really good one. Both those shows, I think, are really good if you're looking to get into Limited.
Yeah, and Good Luck High Five, Megan and Maria have talked about Limited quite a lot, too. So there's lots of good Limited content out there. And the streamers, every streamer basically just plays Limited.
Kenji, Numat.
The ones I watch, Kenji, Caleb, all those. Yeah, they play The Cube, which is a lot of fun, too. So,
you know, one thing that's interesting, and another aside, but this is a Q&A episode. We can do whatever we want. You know, Commander content has gotten so big. You know, obviously no complaints. But when we first started playing Magic, Jimmy, the most popular content that was out there were draft videos. And those have kind of, I'm a little bit sad that that kind of content is not as prevalent as it once was. And there's, you know, it's great that there's so much Commander content and Commander gameplay, and I know a lot of people are looking for that. But Jimmy and I think are a testament to the fact that if you like Commander, Limited is something you probably also will like, because we love Limited and we also love Commander. And if that means you're kind of like us, right? If you like Commander, so it's very possible that we like the same things that you like. So I would encourage you to try Limited.
And we also don't have reasons to just crack packs. We just said buy singles. So Limited gives us an opportunity to crack packs. It's also a great way with eight friends around the table or at your local game store, the whole drafts and all that stuff too.
You can do it with six people too. I think that's fine.
Yeah, and then also
online on Arena, drafting is just the best.
Yep. And it'll definitely make you a better Magic player. I'll say that much for sure. And sometimes you pull a card that you need for Commander. Perfect.
Yeah, it's a great way to sort of trick yourself. Like, I'm allowed to open these packs because I'm going to play Limited with them. But pack cracking is fun because what am I going
to
get?
Yeah, and Commander Legends, not to mention, was built to be a draft set. Same with Battle Bond, which has similarities to Commander. And then the new Commander Legends hopefully will be the same.
All right, question number 9 is a little bit of a tweener. It's not about Magic, but it's also not about content creation. I thought it was an interesting one, though, so I'll read it here.
It's a very interesting question.
From Derek. What do you think of Hearthstone, Legends of Runeterra, Digimon, Flesh and Blood, and other digital and tabletop card games? Have you played any of them?
Okay, so I played Hearthstone, Legends of Runeterra, and like Eternal, a couple of the other like smaller card games that didn't really go anywhere. What about you?
Yeah, I've played Hearthstone, Legends of Runeterra. I haven't played Digimon or Flesh and Blood yet. I've played a couple of the other online stuff.
I played Solitaire a bunch growing up.
Right. What do you think of those games?
So it's interesting because I have now, through my career in LA, I've met developers for Hearthstone and Legends of Runeterra. I've been to the offices. I've seen them working on it. I've seen people playing. I've gotten early access to Legends of Runeterra. I am very, and our friends work on these games as well, actually.
Sean Main, Mel Lee, both Game Nights alums. They both work on Legends of Runeterra.
I enjoyed them for the periods that I played them, but it did not have the same draw and pull that Magic did. And I don't know if it's because they're new games and I just don't care as much about the IP because I didn't play Hearthstone growing up because it didn't exist, or if Magic is in a lot of ways sometimes a better design game or more complex or not as boring. Because Hearthstone, I think, really suffered from this problem, and a lot of players can agree. They didn't really have rotation.
Right.
They had the same like
set. They eventually kind of got their own, but it took a while.
It took a long time, and Magic is always this format that feels new and it's changing and evolving constantly, and there's obviously lots of cards to go along with that. But it felt like Hearthstone just got boring really fast. I felt myself doing the same thing over and over again. Even when those formats had draft formats too, I just wasn't that interested. And the same sort of thing went for Legends of Runeterra. And I wasn't a huge fan of the pass back and forth format of Legends of Runeterra. Mm-hmm. And there's also uncounterable spells, which to me is like, how could you have something be uncounterable? So I, for multiple reasons, not saying these games are bad by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, many of them get better every single day. I think Legends of Runeterra is on an uptick right now in terms of popularity. But for me, Magic has just been the card game for me.
Yeah, it's hard when you're a Magic player not to, you know, compare those games to Magic. It's just, you can't turn off that side of your brain, even though that's not always fair.
Also, all the developers, almost guaranteed, of those games play Magic.
So yeah. They, I mean, we know for sure.
Yeah.
Ones that have moved over and work. Yeah. So Hearthstone, I have the same sort of experience that you do with Hearthstone and Legends of Runeterra, or similar. I like those games. And Hearthstone to this day, Legends of Runeterra 2, I find myself playing in a short spurt. So a new set will come out, an expansion or some new cards, or they'll change some things and I'll play for a week.
Yeah. Oh, let's check out what it's about.
And I have fun. But after a week and a half, I feel like I've sort of found the bottom of that well. And it's not like there's not 1 or 2 percentage points to be gained by like really figuring things out. But it just doesn't feel like the same depth of complexity that Magic offers me.
Yeah.
And so I always end up just, you know, okay, yep, I had the fun and I got a little bit of a break. And now I'm back, you know, to playing Arena or, you know, you know, playing, you know, obviously building Commander decks and things like that.
We're also pretty invested in Magic, obviously, yes, by this point, with Commander and all that, and we love tabletop first. I will say, though, I do play board games that are card games sometimes, like Dominion is kind of like a drafting game. So I find more entertainment from that, honestly, than I do from these other sort of online digital offerings.
I do like what you said there. That is a fair, I think, critique of the situation that we're in because we're content creators.
Yeah.
I do sort of feel a responsibility, obviously, to play Magic because I need to, you know, maintain my love of the game and my knowledge of the game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can't, it's almost like I haven't ever felt the pull, but I don't know that I would be able to allow myself to fall fully into like Hearthstone or something. Because what might happen, like I might start to, you know, invest in that more. I don't know. It's a weird thing to
You could also
about.
Mess up your strategy for the other game, too. There that you happens go. Quite a lot. I think one last point to be made here is that games like Digimon, for instance, getting a lot of popularity recently, and lots of our friends play and people in the office play it as well. I don't know if I'm able to, I have the risk appetite to play another game that I don't know if it's going to survive. Yeah,
it's so true.
A lot of games die sometimes. Now, if Riot's making it, Legends of Runeterra will continue going for as long as they want it to.
They can just lose $1 billion on it a year, and that's still they'll be going. Like, oh, darn, we only have 27 more years before we have to stop making it.
Yeah. Digimon, though, I don't know. I mean, maybe it doesn't exist in 2 years, and then the time and the effort and the things I put into it won't feel like it has that same payoff, even if I did really enjoy the time I did playing it. So that, for me, like, I really have limited time these days, so I have to be really careful in how I sort of split it up.
What was that game we tried to play, Richard Garfield? It had the...
Oh, yeah. It's Keyforge. That's the one. Yeah, I don't know how pyramids work or names of things. So, Keyforge. It was really fun for the 10 times we played it, and then it did not really pick up in popularity. The players we could play with went down, and everyone just went, we have Magic decks, you want to play Magic instead?
Yes, I do.
And that's how it works.
All right, we're going to move on now to our content creator or the sort of behind the scenes for game nights and things like that questions. So if you're only here for the Magic stuff, adios, thanks for sticking around. Everybody else, let's go on to question number 10. It's from Tim.
About game nights, by the way.
Yeah, why didn't you guys do a jumpstart episode of game nights?
Oh, well, Josh, I wasn't here, I think. I was out of town, right? That was during Mulan years? I think it was.
No, I don't think so. You were back. It was like 2020.
Well, in that case, I just couldn't get my hand on any product.
Well, it was hard to get a hold of Jumpstart.
It was also the pandemic.
I think, you know, a lot of product comes out, and we work with Wizards to kind of determine which ones we're going to be able to get ahead of time. And,
yeah.
Because, you know, we need a lot of lead time to make game nights. And I think Jumpstart just came out in a time when it was like, okay, listen, we got to pick between these three things. Because we physically cannot produce an episode of Game Nights in less than like 5 weeks' time.
Yeah, especially now that we're adding more fun stuff to each episode.
So if three sets come out within a 12-week period, there is no way we can make three episodes. We have to pick only two of those sets. And I believe that is what happened with Jumpstart.
Yeah, I think there's also some questions too. Like, we want to make the best episode for our fans, and we've heard lots of feedback that we just want Commander gameplay. And so I think sometimes when we go into different things, it can be a little risky.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know if Tim was asking about... Yeah, maybe Tim was asking why we didn't play the actual Jumpstart format. But we also could have just built decks around the Legends from Jumpstart.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. We don't know what you're asking, Tim. Who knows?
Yeah. Okay. This one is obviously a question you should read.
Yes. Marco asks, does Freddie Wong play Magic? Would you ever consider having him on game nights? Wow. So Frey's my brother. He's a longtime content creator. It's how Josh and I met, because Josh was doing some trailer advisory work in consulting.
Video Game High School
season 3. High School season 2, I think,
three.
Right? Yeah, 3. Okay. And so we met at the Rocket Jump offices. Matt Arnold, Freddie's business partner, also played Magic, and he joined us for that initial sort of foray into Commander. Freddie used to play Magic. So both of us are from Seattle. We grew up around, we went to the same preschool, we went to the same, you know, middle school, and that's where I learned to play Magic. And so Freddie, at that same time, also learned how to play. I remember playing him all the way back then. I think it was Ice Age. But he hasn't kept up. And I don't blame him. He loves playing all sorts of other games. He's got really into like Tarkov. He got really into, he now he's playing a bunch of Halo. So he's more in that world of games, Left 4 Dead and all that.
Yep.
So if Freddie wanted to be on game nights, he would need to do some serious studying.
He would have to play for a while, because obviously game nights is not a format where a novice can really come in and shine on the show because of the interviews and everything. So
yeah, there's a lot going on.
And we, you'll notice we're just not going after anybody who doesn't play.
Yeah.
Right? You have to play. Yeah, you have to be able to talk smart about it, because we want our audience to not only be able to be entertained, but also to learn from you. So you have to understand like what the strategy is and why you're making the moves. You don't, you know, we're not only pro players or anything, but we want it to be, you know, educational as well as entertaining. So yeah, Freddie could absolutely do it because he's one of the smartest people I've ever met. So he definitely could if he ever put his mind to it. But, you know, he's obviously got a lot going on. You didn't mention, I mean, they do the Dungeons and Daddies podcast.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
They're one of the most popular podcasts in the world.
Yeah. I think it's number two, the Critical Role for Dungeons and Dragons, by the way. So
it's top 50 in the world as far as on Spotify as podcasts.
Yeah.
I saw that they just got their 20,000th patron.
Yep.
So
that's wild.
They're obviously, I mean, it's Freddie, so it's not surprising in any way, but obviously killing it and very busy. But if Freddie, if you're listening to this, which I know you're not, if you ever got into Magic and wanted to come on game nights, and you just have to say to us, Josh, Jimmy, I know what I'm doing.
One may stand.
We would believe you. He can come on at any time.
Yeah.
He'll probably kick our butts at that point too.
Yeah, and I'm sure he'll do something where we'll both go like, wow.
For sure.
That, I didn't even think you could ever do that, but you came up with the idea. Cool.
All right. Question number 12. This is from Seraphim. So, why did you change the thumbnails for extra turns? I loved Josiah Cameron's illustrations. So what we'll do is, if you're watching the YouTube video, you'll notice the early episodes of Get Extra Turns have these cool illustrations that Josiah Cameron, who does the tokens for game nights, he did the thumbnails. And he did really cool stuff where he took the characters that we played, the legendary creatures, the decks we played, and then drew new versions of their art sort of facing off like they were about to fight.
Well, I know the answer to this.
Yeah, go for it.
Well, unfortunately, as cool as those illustrations are, when most people see them, it's on the phone, and it's about this big. So the detail gets lost. You lose the clickability of why that video, why you want to watch it, and you don't actually instantly know whether or not you're watching a gameplay video either, right?
Yeah, I think that was the big thing. And you might have brought it to the attention originally, and I think it's very smart. Jimmy, obviously, been in the YouTube world for...
still make bad thumbnails, though.
Years and years, and is always, you know, imparting that wisdom. And I think, yeah, the illustrations, as cool as they are, they just didn't serve the purpose that we needed a thumbnail to serve, which is that the audience knows what it is and is therefore, enticed to click on it.
Yeah.
Because at that size, it just kind of, it looked a little bit like a blob. You couldn't tell that they were even characters. It definitely didn't, scream out to you that it was Magic content or gameplay. So we just had to redesign it because, you know, obviously... when you're making content, you're spending so much time on it, you want people to know what it is and click on it, and then so they have the chance to enjoy it.
Yeah, and I think we also just know for a fact that algorithmically faces just work better for thumbnails, and the way that we have it now hopefully gets more people to watch the episode instead of just sort of seeing something, not really knowing what it's about, because you need to capture them on multiple levels. They need to see a thumbnail, see a title, maybe a little bit of a description, and all of those factors combined into whether or not they're going to click through and watch the video. And we would rather people see the video and instead of, you know, highlighting art from someone that you can't even see. Now, maybe if we like wrote an article somewhere about extra turns,
that'd be cool.
The whole Josiah Cameron thing could be like the top splash art, but that feels like a place where it actually belongs.
Well, I mean, the good news is we established a relationship with Joe and have used him on our tokens and really found a good place for his illustrations to shine. That's sort of better suited for what it is he's doing than the thumbnails are.
Yep. All right. Next question comes from Magnus. Magnus asks, who makes the music/soundtrack for Game Nights and Extra Turns? Who is your brilliant composer?
Well, Magnus, I hate to pull the curtain back here for you. There's no composer. We use an online music library, a large one called Audio Network.
Mm-hmm.
And then some other sources occasionally will go to other music libraries. But for the most part, Audio Network is the one that we use because they have a huge library of songs and they're all categories and searchable. And so we have just over the years spent time searching through, finding the songs that sort of fit what Game Nights is.
Yeah, you can search by mood, ambience, tone, beats per minute. Yeah,
all kinds of stuff. It just ends up being really, really good and a good resource, but we don't have like one person that's composing all that music.
And to be clear, each of those songs does have a composer,
yes.
But they're at this point, I don't know, 20, 30, 40, 50 of them that we've been using. Yeah,
there's probably 25 to 35 songs that are in the regular rotation for Game Nights. And then when there's specialized stuff like Christmas or like when we did the Strixhaven college videos or things like that, where we'll go and search for something for this specific, you know, like the GPS skit with us in the car.
Oh,
we needed spooky music. That's not something that we just had sitting around. We had to go through their library, search for some stuff, pull some options, pick one. We
sometimes
pay for,
even blend other two tracks together and stuff. Yeah.
Layer them. And we pay for all the stuff too. You need to get the licensing rights and everything. And we do that for sure.
Sometimes you do pop up another video though, and you just hear a da 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 da.
You know,
is that Game Nights?
My girlfriend likes the show 90 Day Fiance.
Yeah.
And I have heard multiple Game Nights tracks on that show. So
funny.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Question number 14 from Lo. I am interested in starting a MTG podcast, but it seems like there are so many podcasts and shows out there. How do I make an interesting podcast that people will watch? What type of topics do people generally like to listen to? Lo, lucky for you, Josh and I have done an entire podcast for this at one point.
Yeah, we'll link it in the show notes. It is about content creation. I forget what we've titled it now, because I think we retitled and
Content Creator Secrets, how to grow your channel from zero to something. Yeah, there's some titling going on there, I think.
So yeah, we definitely have a full episode that's about sort of this topic, Lo, which we'll link and you can find and we'll help you. I will say in general, the question, how do I make an interesting podcast that people will watch? The easiest and best way for you to go about this is make something that you would find interesting that doesn't currently exist or you don't currently have to your taste. So this is the reason Command Zone exists at all, and I think is a pretty good barometer. Whereas Jimmy and I started playing Limited, we listened to Limited Resources, we were learning a lot, really loving that show. We started playing Commander and we naturally went, oh, let's find a podcast that's doing what Limited Resources is doing, but for Commander. And we looked around and we didn't find a podcast, and we were like, huh, there's that podcast doesn't exist, which is hard to believe now because there's 50 million Commander podcasts. But at the time, you know, there was one or two. They just weren't easily findable.
Yeah.
And probably not to our taste, not nuts and bolts, more like Limited Resources. And so Jimmy and I literally looked at each other and said,
you want to do a podcast?
Yeah, maybe we should just make that Commander podcast because it's something we would listen to and no one else is making it. There must be other people like us
that want to do this thing and listen to this podcast. Oh, wait. What should we make our first episode about?
Yeah. How to play Commander. Commander 101.
How should we make... and then our next few episodes.
Our second and third episode were about drafting Conspiracy. Yeah. Again, did we mention we like Limited? But Lo, I would say, as you're listening to shows like this or any other shows, you know, what is your inner dialogue as they're talking? Oftentimes I know I'll be listening to shows and I will think like that. No, I don't agree with that at all. Here's what I think about that. Write that stuff down. Those are your topics. That's your point of view. That's your perspective. That's your interesting stuff to say. Listen to a lot of Magic content and write down all the stuff where you're like, even if you agree with somebody, oh, that's absolutely right. And here's a point about that they didn't even mention and I agree with them.
Write that
stuff down. Now you have more topics, more points, more things to talk about. If you're feeling that stuff and you're feeling strongly about it, it's going to make good content.
Yeah, and because you're interested in it, that's all the barometer you need to know that this is going to be interesting, because guaranteed, at least someone else out there will find the thing interesting the same way that you do. I think, too, to make a podcast quote-unquote interesting, you need to put some amount of work into it.
Yeah.
It can't just be like, I'm going to sit down and figure it out as I go. You know, outlines, you've done this in high school, hopefully. You've written outlines for things. You've written out points, talking points, questions, points of interest, research, and all that stuff. All of those things, people go to podcasts as an informational resource. And if they're going to listen to 2 hours or an hour of something or even less than that, and they don't learn anything, they're not going to have a reason to come back. So a big part of interesting podcasts to me is usually when you know that the person that's talking has done the work and they know what they're talking about, so that you walk away from it going, wow, thank goodness for Hardcore History by Dan Carlin. I just learned 20 things about the Baltic War that changed the way I see modern day society.
I really like that point. I think probably we haven't, when speaking on this, hammered on it enough. Respect your audience, and the best way to respect your audience is to prepare and give them the value of your time. Jimmy, when you're outlining an episode for our show, how many hours would you say before we hit the record button, when you're the driver of that episode?
Probably 4 to 5, depending. I mean, it's not like I'm sitting there in full blasting 4 hours in a row. I'll spend a couple hours on the podcast outline. I'll go look up things. I'll read 5 different articles and see what other people are saying. I might ask a friend what their opinions are, and if they have any viewpoints, I'll ask The Office if anyone has anything. But yeah, I'd spend anywhere between 4 or 5, maybe even 6 hours. Especially set reviews take...
Oh, set reviews... 12 hours of research, just trying to make sure we've got all the, you know, all the angles covered, didn't miss anything,
didn't make any rules mistakes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're spending hours and hours and hours of time just organizing the outline so that the episodes will flow and the topics will make sense and we're not repeating ourselves and we have, you know, some logic to how we're flowing through the information before we even hit the record button. So respect your audience, do your work, plan, don't just hit record and talk. Nobody, I'm sitting next to a guy who's been on YouTube since the very beginning.
Yeehaw.
Has been in Disney movies, has like one of the most popular, is the voice of one of the most popular like animated films of the last year. And we don't take for granted that we're just going to be entertaining if we turn the podcast mics on and hit record. We don't say like, hey, our personalities are so great, people are just going to like what we say and find it awesome and funny. Even though I have more right to assume that than almost anybody out there who's just starting their own podcast. But we still spend 5 to 12 hours putting the pieces of paper together so that we can go through our points and have our thing organized and make sense and have it well presented to everyone out there.
If we were that entertaining, maybe we should just become streamers.
Man, streaming is hard.
Yeah. But by the way, if you go to our Patreon, patreon.com/commandzone, if you, even at the lowest tier, you get access to all of our show notes. So that's a great place to also look. You can see 400 plus full-on outlines of show notes, how we organize it and all that stuff. So that's a great resource there, so you can check all that out.
Yeah, we go to the detail of, like, if you look at our outlines, we're literally, like, putting in the outline not just what we're going to talk about, but what graphics text we want on screen happening.
Blue banner, orange banner, all that stuff, yeah.
Okay, one more question to go. We're almost there.
A good one.
Number 15 from Sam. What advice would you give to someone pursuing a career in the creative industry? I am finishing my music degree this year and would love to be able to turn my passion into a full-time job. And I'm curious as to how you guys were able to follow your dream and make it into a reality. So this is related to the last one. And I will say we have done an episode talking about Jimmy and my journey to where we sort of are at in life, although it ends like 4 years ago because that's when we recorded. But it's called The Creative Process, I believe.
With Rob Pryor. Pryor, yep.
And my buddy, the painter. I think actually... We renamed it and re-released it recently as like how we got here.
Oh, yeah. We actually re-released it very recently.
Anyway, it'll be linked in the show notes as well for you, Sam, if you want to find it. So again, we will cover this topic again very quickly. But if you literally want to hear Jimmy and my origin stories, it's in that episode.
Yeah, this is a tough one, though, because the music industry is very different than the entertainment industry. It's very different than the arts industry, the theater industry, all those things. I dabbled a little bit in music. I've worked with producers in New York. We obviously both know this guy named Post Malone. We've seen him a little bit as well in the studio. And from what I can tell, it is very, 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 very hard to break into music as like a big mainstream performer. But just like the movie industry, you're not going to be Brad Pitt overnight, but you can find yourself working on movies that Brad Pitt is on if you take the right steps. And if you're okay with sort of doing the backseat or behind the camera work, the studio work, there's many different paths. You can look up all sorts of different producers that spent their time first as just the guy running the tape back when they did tape in the studios, to the guy that started mixing it, to the lady that eventually started mastering it and then editing it. And then eventually they work with some of the biggest artists in the world, but it takes them that process of getting their foot in the door and then moving from there.
Yeah, the creative industry is, and everybody that comes out of school and like has a film degree or a music degree or some sort of, you know, degree that's related to creativity, It is daunting, right? Because it's like, I want to be this thing, but what's required to become the thing is, you know, love and adoration of a lot of fans and people that want to buy the thing.
Massive successes, number one singles.
That's what it feels like. And it's just like, okay, from where I am and where I'm trying to get to, like, it just does not seem like there's a really good path there. And the one thing I would say to you, Sam, and anybody looking in the creative industry, if you want to be a writer, If you want to be a painter, make music if you want to be a musician. Write if you want to be a writer. Paint if you want to be a painter. If you want to be a filmmaker, get out there and make films. Whatever the thing is you want to do, do the thing. Because I'm going to tell you right now, and probably a lot of people in your life won't tell you this, you're not good enough at it yet. You're not. I wasn't. Jimmy wasn't. That's just the way that it is. There's very few people that at the age of 22 or whenever you're getting out of school
are going to be good enough.
You're not Billie Eilish. You're not Post Malone. And if you are,
more power to you.
You're going to be fine. Right? Because You're a genius. You're like one in a billion or whatever. But the better scenario, the more realistic scenario, is that you can become good enough at it. But too many people wallow in wanting to become the thing and right. don't actually work on their craft. Make music if you want to be a musician. Make a lot of music. Keep making music.
Yeah.
Because that's how you're going to become good at the craft of making music. I know so many friends that want to be writers, but they don't write anything.
So they're really just wannabe writers.
Write screenplays. I just don't know anybody who's writing all the time who didn't become a paid writer of some kind.
At some point, right?
Yeah. Now, they're not going to be Lawrence Kasdan necessarily, right? Like, they're not going to be the biggest, you know, William Goldman or something. That's not... You can't control that part of it if you're going to be like one of the top, you know, 100 geniuses to do the thing that you want to do of all time. But can you make a living as a writer? Can you be a staff writer on a TV show?
Oh, heck yeah.
Can you write articles and get paid? And what you're doing day to day to pay your rent is typing on a computer, writing?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, anybody can get to that level. And that's a great life.
Yeah, I'm friends with someone named Jen D'Angelo, and she's now writing on major shows, movies. You see her names in the presses all the time. I knew her 10 years ago. We were in a level one improv class, and she was taking the class because she wanted to become a better writer. She wanted to learn how to do improv comedy to do so, and that was one of the many reasons, obviously. But a big part of also doing the creative craft is learning whether or not you are capable of doing the creative craft. I think a lot of people also have dreams of doing something, and then when they get down to it, they go, I don't enjoy this. I don't like doing this. I don't want to do any more of it. And so that is a really quick way to find out if you're actually suited for what your dreams are. And I think that's really important, because if you don't match with the actual work that it takes to become the best at something, then you're going to have a long road ahead of you. And I think another important thing too is find people that can mentor you, find people that can you go for advice, watch videos, master classes. Like, you're not just dipping a toe into the water of your craft. Try and jump full head on, because otherwise you're not going to be able to see things, right? The people that have been swimming in that pool for longer are going to know, oh, at that part of the pool, it's this deep, and down there, there's this secret, but you can only get there after you practice holding your breath for 2 days. And so you got to be able to get to those points, I think, for creative stuff, to be able to understand how far you have to go in certain cases, is how much you have to try at something to get to the point where it starts to feel like you're actually that thing.
I love what you said there. Preach on, Jimmy. If you can get around people that just be around people that are doing the thing you want to do.
Yeah.
The value of it is insane. As Jimmy mentioned, we've both had the opportunity, insane opportunity, to sort of hang out with Post Malone in the recording studio while he's doing some of his music. And I got to say, like, I learned an amazing amount of stuff just by being a fly on the wall in the room while they're doing stuff. And so,
by the way, you can watch documentaries where the Beatles literally are doing this.
Yeah.
You can learn just as much. It's all out there. You don't need to be friends with celebrities to do that, right?
Yeah. So just try and get around those people. They, you know, I think we've referenced this on the show before, but one of the things they say about the Williams sisters in tennis, so Venus and Serena Williams, you know,
two of the greatest tennis players
of all time.
Yeah.
And one of the things they say about them is, that happened because there are two of them.
Oh.
If there was one, there's probably nobody around that has the skill, especially they came out of Compton or Inglewood or, you know,
yeah.
East Top LA, South Central or whatever, where it's just not known for a place that cultivates great tennis talent.
Right.
Right. And but because they are, you know, obviously supremely naturally talented, but if they didn't have another person to push them
right.
and to show, then how could they ever get, you know, keep pushing each other to the point where they dominate the sport? And so getting yourself around other people that are, you know, involved in what you want to do, yeah, it's a phenomenal how much that will make you better and make them better, and, you know, ultimately lead you to where you want to go, which is, again, I think being able to do the thing professionally and make your living at it. And then the rest is like gravy if you can, you know, become the next, you're a musician, so if you can become the next Post Malone or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I hope you can, Sam.
Think about it too. Like, if I wanted to edit trailers and I got to hang out with Josh has accumulated probably over, what, 10,000 hours just working as an editor?
Yeah.
That is an infinite amount of time more than you have done so far. And if there are two Joshes in the room, that's 20,000 hours of accumulated knowledge.
I'm personally at 40,000 hours or something.
Just watch Josh and another editor talk for 2 hours and you have a masterclass on so many different things, even the way that they approach a problem, right? Watching people like the Serena and the Williams sisters train, you see how hard they work. You see how they're doing it. You see their mentality. If they fall down, how do they get back up? All of those things add up to becoming a better person at the craft that you're trying to master.
All right. To the listeners, what questions do you have for us for future Q&A episodes? We're always looking for cool topic ideas. I will say, some of the big questions we get from listeners they do end up turning into full-on podcast episodes when we feel like that the meal is
full. Haste one might turn into a full-on podcast. Yeah,
it's interesting. I'll have to think about that one some more. So definitely, we love everybody out there that listens to our show. And you can help us a lot by just, like, you know, asking us questions and letting us know what you're interested in or what particular parts of our show you enjoy. Because when we get that information, we will generally run with it.
Mm-hmm. And of course, make sure you check out our sponsors, channelfireball.com/command. We talked about a lot of stuff today. Maybe it's got your brain going about a new idea or a new tactic you want to try in game. Well, the best way to do that is actually get the cards once you finalize your decisions. Go to channelfireball.com/command. You're going to be shopping from hundreds and thousands, maybe not hundreds of thousands, thousands and thousands of local game stores from across the country and world. You're going to be supporting them as well as getting great deals on cards straight to your doorstep. Nothing better than that.
Yeah. I don't know if there are hundreds of thousands of LGSs in the world. Probably not. That's probably shooting a little bit high, but yeah, definitely thousands.
Definitely thousands.
Yeah. And once you get all those cards, remember, you want to protect them. Ultra Pro creates the products that Jimmy and I trust our own personal collections to. And you know that we don't want our cards to get dinged up, scuffed up, ruined in any way. Magic cards do have a lot of value and they tend to increase in price over time. So you want to, you know, maintain the value of that stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. So Eclipse sleeves. Nice Ultra Pro Playmat Satin Tower deck boxes.
Ooh, even like the Playmat tubes. I love those.
Oh, yeah. Those are great because we have some Playmats here that we got in Vegas in like 2015 or whatever that are actually worth a decent amount of money just by virtue of just being old.
Mine's a Lightning Bolt signed by Christopher Rush. And
you got it signed by Christopher Rush?
Yeah, and I don't even touch it anymore because I consider that thing sacred.
You got to frame that thing.
I know, seriously.
That's pretty cool.
All right. Oh, Endstep, where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic. I feel like we talked a lot of cool things today. Do you have anything?
Hold on.
Netflix documentaries.
You got a Netflix shows. Documentary?
Hey, how about an update on how Wheel of Time is going? Oh, no. Okay, maybe not.
Well, I don't like to be critical, you know this, because I've been involved with too many pieces of media that I know that it's not like people's fault.
Yeah, right? It takes a village.
Yeah, it's too easy to be like, this is bad and get mad at people about it. And I know how hard it is to make good stuff. But Wheel of Time, I was, you know...
Excited for.
I was excited for. And as I watched it, I was like medium on it. I was like, okay, you know, it's not amazing. I mean, to me. But then it kind of got better and I was got a little more hopeful. And then the season finale kind of lost me a little bit. I was a little bit disappointed.
Ooh, no.
I mean, obviously, I'm a huge fan of the show. And it got greenlit, I heard, for two more seasons. So
okay. Do you think it's a good investment of time if someone's looking to watch the series but doesn't want to read the books? Or would you still recommend the books?
I think I would still recommend the books. They're not perfect or anything, but you can watch the show. I mean, it just depends on how much free time you've got.
Ah, okay. That's a good way. That's a great way, right? It's not like a must-watch sit-down. Yeah. Everyone's talking about it. How much free time do you have? If so, fit it in.
You haven't watched it?
No, I haven't. I was kind of waiting for you to tell me.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I would watch something else, probably. I was trying to think of something else, though. I think everybody's like we are. I'm assuming you are, Jimmy, which is like, it's the pandemic. I've watched everything.
Yeah, I've heard Yellow Jackets is really great. A lot of people talking about that.
It looks scary, and my girlfriend won't watch scary things.
No, same thing goes for me too.
What about Witcher 2? Did you watch Witcher 2?
Not yet. I've seen Witcher 1. I liked it a lot, so I hope Witcher 2 is great. It seems fun. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I've seen it.
We can talk about then.
Yeah, I've seen. We'll have two end steps today.
Nice.
I've seen it, and I don't want to give away anything, but yeah, I think it's a little better than Wheel of Time.
Nice. Well, it's continuing the tradition of being okay adaptations.
Did you read the books, Witcher books at all?
I did not. I played the games, and I know the books are a very different beast, but I heard the books are incredible.
I haven't read the books, so that may be the difference, too. If I read the books...
Oh, you'd have a different... Yeah.
Because, you know, there's this dichotomy that happens where... Is dichotomy the right word? There's this dynamic, I guess is probably the better word, where if you've read the book of a thing, you tend to be a lot more critical of the thing. And I'm aware of that, right? Yes. So that might be my position with Wheel of Time because I have certain expectations and certain things I loved about it. And they change and subvert things, which if you haven't read the books might be totally fine and not bother you. You don't even notice.
Yeah, but you're like, oh, why did they do that?
Yeah, so somebody who read the Witcher books is probably going, no, it was not good, Josh, and here's why. And it's the same arguments I would make for Wheel of Time. So I don't know. Whichever fantasy series that starts with a W that you want to watch, go ahead.
All right, cleanup step. Big thanks to our amazing team here at the Command Zone: Arthur Meadowcroft, Sean Aguilas, Damon Lenz, Lady Danger, Manson Lung, Craig Blanchett, Ashlyn Rose, Joss Murphy, Jake Boss, Patrick Nan, Jordan Pridgen, Sam Walder, Garav Galati, Truck Tie, Jamie Block, Evan Limburger, and our brand new IT guy, Mitch Trafford.
And special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer for the Living Card animations that begin in the show and sometimes sit behind us here. He did this. This is Days, the invocation.
Love it.
You can find Jeffrey on Twitter at Living Cards MTG.
All right, everyone. Thanks so much for sending us in questions, and we will see you for the next one. Bye-bye.
Peace.
And of course, make sure you check out our sponsors, channelfireball.com/command. We talked about a lot of stuff today. Maybe it's got your brain going about a new idea or a new tactic you want to try in-game. Well, the best way to do that is actually get the cards once you finalize your decision. Go to channelfireball.com/command. You're going to be shopping from hundreds and thousands, maybe not hundreds of thousands, thousands and thousands of local game stores from across the country and world. You're going to be supporting them as well as getting great deals on cards straight to your doorstep. Nothing better than that.
Yeah, I don't know if there are hundreds of thousands of LGSs in the world. Probably not. That's probably shooting a little bit high, but yeah, definitely thousands.
Definitely thousands.
Yeah, and once you get all those cards, remember, you want to protect them. Ultra Pro creates the products that Jimmy and I trust our own personal collections to, and you know that we don't want our cards to get dinged up, scuffed up, ruined in any way. Magic cards do have a lot of value, and they tend to increase in price over time, so you want to, you know, maintain the value of that stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, so Eclipse sleeves, nice Ultra Pro playmat satin tower deck boxes.
Ooh, even like the playmat tubes. I love those.
Oh, yeah. Those are great because we have some playmats here that we got in Vegas in like 2015 or whatever that are actually worth a decent amount of money just by virtue of just being old.
Mine's a lightning bolt signed by Christopher Rush. And
you got it signed by Christopher Rush?
Yeah, and I don't even touch it anymore because I consider that thing sacred.
You got to frame that thing.
I know, seriously.
That's pretty cool.
All right. Oh, Endstep, where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic. I feel like we talked a lot of cool things today. Do you have anything?
Hold on.
Netflix documentaries.
You got a Netflix shows. Documentary?
Hey, how about an update on how Wheel of Time is going? Oh, no. Okay, maybe not.
Well, I don't like to be critical, you know this, because I've been involved with too many pieces of media that I know that it's not like people's fault.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It takes a village.
Yeah, it's too easy to be like, this is bad and get mad at people about it. And I know how hard it is to make good stuff. But Wheel of Time, I was, you know,
excited for.
I was excited for. And yeah, as I watched it, I was like medium on it. I was like, okay, you know, it's not amazing. I mean, to me. But then it kind of got better and I was got a little more hopeful. And then the season finale kind of lost me a little bit. I was a little bit disappointed.
Ooh, no.
I mean, obviously, I'm a huge fan of the show. And it got greenlit, I heard, for two more seasons. So
okay. Do you think it's a good investment of time if someone's looking to watch the series but doesn't want to read the books? Or would you still recommend the books?
I think I would still recommend the books. They're not perfect or anything, but you can watch the show. I mean, it just depends on how much free time you've got.
Ah, okay. That's a good way. That's a great way, right? It's not like a must-watch sit-down. Yeah. Everyone's talking about it. How much free time do you have? If so, fit it in.
You haven't watched it?
No, I haven't. I was kind of waiting for you to tell me.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I would watch something else, probably. I was trying to think of something else, though. I think everybody's like we are. I'm assuming you are, Jimmy, which is like, it's the pandemic. I've watched everything.
Yeah, I've heard Yellow Jackets is really great. A lot of people talking about that.
It looks scary, and my girlfriend won't watch scary things.
No, same thing goes for me too.
What about Witcher 2? Did you watch Witcher 2?
Not yet. I've seen Witcher 1. I liked it a lot, so I hope Witcher 2 is great. It seems fun. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I've seen it.
We can talk about then.
Yeah, I've seen it. We'll have two in steps today.
Nice.
I've seen it, and I don't want to give away anything, but yeah, I think it's a little better than Wheel of Time.
Nice. Well, it's continuing the tradition of being okay adaptations.
Did you read the books, Witcher books?
I did not. I played the games, and I know the books are a very different beast, but I heard the books are incredible.
I haven't read the books, so that may be the difference, too. If I read the books...
Oh, you'd have a different... Yeah.
Because, you know, there's this dichotomy that happens where... Is dichotomy the right word? There's this dynamic, I guess is probably the better word, where if you've read the book of a thing, you tend to be a lot more critical of the thing. And I'm aware of that, right? Yes. So that might be my position with Wheel of Time because I have certain expectations and certain things I loved about it. And they change and subvert things, which if you haven't read the books, might be totally fine and not bother you. You don't even notice.
Yeah, but you're like, oh, why did they do that?
Yeah, so somebody who read the Witcher books is probably going, no, it was not good, Josh, and here's why. And it's the same arguments I would make for Wheel of Time. So I don't know. Whichever fantasy series that starts with a W that you want to watch, go ahead.
All right, cleanup step. Big thanks to our amazing team here at the Command Zone: Arthur Meadowcroft, Sean Aguilas, Damon Lenz, Lady Danger, Manson Lung, Craig Blanchett, Ashlyn Rose, Joss Murphy, Jake Boss, Patrick Nan, Jordan Pridgen, Sam Walder, Garav Galati, Truck Tie, Jamie Block, Evan Limburger, and our brand new IT guy, Mitch Trafford.
And special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer for the living card animations that begin in the show and sometimes sit behind us here. He did this. This is Days, the invocation.
Love it.
You can find Jeffrey on Twitter at livingcardsmtg.
All right, everyone. Thanks so much for sending us in questions, and we will see you for the next one. Bye-bye.
Peace.
For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JF Wong and @Josh Lee Quai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.